Good afternoon. So I'm not going to be speaking about water. So in a way, my topic is a little bit out of the realm of our prior presentations, but it really connects to both of the previous presenters, by the end at least, because the idea of this environmental public health tracking, I think, is very pertinent to the issue that I'm going to talk about, which is land application of treated sewage sludge, both on the exposure and the outcome side. And the hydroepidemiologic model is also of interest because even though what I'll be talking about are acute impacts, which could occur to people who are exposed to airborne contaminants from land application events, these are waste materials that are going on land, and they could constitute a very important non-point source. And actually, there's some developing evidence that on the chemical side of the sorts of systems that we just heard about. So at least part of this model, the hydrology part, is relevant not only to pathogens, but also to chemicals. So, first let me acknowledge my co-authors, most of whom are at University of North Carolina, except for Rob Hale, who is at Virginia Institute of Marine Science. The issue of sewage sludge is, I think, increasingly important. All the cities in our country and in other countries that have the resources have to treat their water, their wastewater, before they return it to a river or a lake or to the ocean. And this is a part of a much more general issue that has faced our species forever, and especially since the emergence of cities, which is disposition of our wastes. And cities produce not just solid waste, but also waste water. And to the extent that we remove pollutants, pathogens, toxicants from the wastewater and have to do something with them, that becomes a public health issue. So it also relates, this topic relates to the relationships between urban areas and rural areas, because urban areas produce the waste, most of the waste, because that's where the population is, but rural areas receive the wastes. So this is actually one of the aspects of environmental injustice that is not talked about too much, that there's the producers in the cities avoid the wastes by placing them into rural areas. Disclosures. None of us have any personal financial relationships with commercial interests in the past 12 months. But this research was funded by the federal government, and we all work for universities, and some people might consider those to be conflicts of interest. So first, a few pictures of what it is that I'll be talking about. Here is liquid treated sewage sludge being applied to land in North Carolina in 2009. So this is one of the fates of sewage sludge, and it's a fate that is considered to be recycling. A second method of land application is as a cake material. So this is somewhat dried. The percent solids here might be something like 25%, whereas the percent solids in the liquid case are something like 3 to 5%. And just a photograph of a neighborhood, you can see the trucks that have been applying this. They're coming out of a field that's along the side of this road, and it's very close to homes. So the problem that I'm talking about is what happens when people who live nearby these activities could be exposed when airborne material migrates off-site. Just a little bit of information, an overview of what's going on in the United States. There are over 7 million dry tons of treated sewage sludge estimated to be produced in the United States every year, and about half of them are land applied. Typically, the type of procedures, there's some other engineering methods, but those are typical ones that I showed the photographs of before. So we conducted a study, and let me give you a little background. There have been case reports of symptoms among people who live near these land application sites, and they often come to state health departments or departments of environment, depending on I've forgotten how Wisconsin deals with this, but I know that you have a history of attention to this issue in Wisconsin, so it'd be interesting to talk to you afterwards. These are in rural areas, and because the applications are generally covered under permits that are controlled either by a state or by the federal government, by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the activities are deemed to be safe, but people report symptoms. And so one of the questions is that people will say, well, suppose this is not due to the land application of sewage sludge, but it's due to land application of livestock wastes. And what we know from studies that we've done and others have done is that air pollutants from land application of livestock wastes, which are also used as soil amendments, can be measured in neighborhoods nearby. So we've measured in terms of particulate matter and hydrogen sulfide are two markers that we have detected in nearby communities, and they are their presence and concentration are related to reports of symptoms and to physiologic measurements made on neighbors who are near the these industrial livestock facilities. Treated sewage sludge, so I'm going to use the acronym TSS to distinguish it from untreated sludge. Treated sewage sludge receives more treatment, but it includes some of the same types of compounds that are found in livestock wastes: odorant chemicals, endotoxins, allergens, pathogens, and industrial chemicals, which are actually more common in sewage sludge than livestock wastes, because livestock don't run industry like people do. So as I mentioned, neighbors of sludge application sites report acute symptoms like those reported by neighbors of livestock operations, and our study was designed to try and capture this in terms of looking at treated sewage sludge application, but also looking at livestock odor as an indication of exposure to livestock. So we chose three communities for the study. The first community consisted of homes that were within 1 kilometer of fields where liquid treated sewage sludge was applied within the 6 months before the survey. And there were about 5 million gallons applied near these homes, constituting about 902 dry tons. The second community consisted of homes within 1 kilometer of fields where dewatered cake treated sewage sludge was applied within the last 6 months, about 3,000 dry tons. And then we had third areas, homes that were more than 5 kilometers from the nearest sites that were permitted by the state for land application of sewage sludge. We first conducted an enumeration of households in each of the defined areas. We conducted a door-to-door survey of adults, people aged 18 and above. They responded to structured questions on demographics, smoking, 14 symptoms, and 4 types of environmental odors that they had experienced in the last 6 months. And we also asked them some open-ended questions about health and the environment. Now, in addition to this, at the end of the survey, we asked each participant if they would be willing to donate a pine needle sample from their yard. And why did we want that? Well, it has been shown that pines take up flame retardants, and we knew that flame retardants have been found in treated sewage sludge, but they're not found in livestock waste because livestock don't use computers and upholstery and carpets and other things that we use in our routine lives that contain flame retardants, and also the industries that use flame retardants are not run by livestock. So this was the idea here, is that if we could find a relationship between this brominated diphenyl ether, BDE 209, the congener 209, which is a component of DECA BDE, which was a commonly used brominated flame retardant until its recent phase out, then that would be an indication that we were seeing a signal from a human waste stream rather than an animal waste stream. So in our data analysis, we classified residents of the treated sewage sludge areas according to the odors they reported. This was an attempt to develop a sort of dose response. So we had the comparison communities with no application, and then we had people in each of the areas where sewage sludge is applied to land who reported no odor or faint odor that they had noticed versus moderate, strong, or very strong odors. Remember, we asked them about symptoms. Factor analysis was used to summarize the distributions of related physical symptoms. We treated the factor scores as dependent variables in linear regression and the actual symptom reports as the outcome in logistic regression. And these models were fit using generalized estimating equations because of the fact that we permitted more than one person from each house to participate, and there, the data were not independent because there was clustering within homes. We adjusted the environmental exposure data, or the relationships between sewage sludge and these symptoms, for a number of covariates that differed between the communities: age, race, sex, education, smoking, passive smoking, or environmental tobacco smoke. And we also asked about two other environmental odors that we adjusted for as possible confounders. And then we used linear regression to evaluate the BDE 209 levels in relation to the treated sewage sludge quantities and weather variables. So this was for the pine needles. So, and this was our analysis to discover whether indeed there was more treated sewage sludge or higher flame retardant levels near the fields where the sludge is applied. So you probably can't read this very well, but this is basically a listing of our household enumeration, eligibility, response, and refusal rates. Taking you down to the bottom, our refusal rates were somewhat lower in the communities where there was land-applied sewage sludge. About 25% of people in the area where liquid treated sewage sludge was applied, 16% in the cake areas versus 34%, a little higher refusal rate in the comparison areas. So just a little bit about the people in the study. There were 157 people here at the bottom in the liquid treated sewage sludge areas and 85 in the cake sewage sludge and 188 in the comparison areas. I'd just like to draw your attention, for the most part, they're fairly similar here on demographics. The people in the liquid treated sewage sludge area are a little bit younger. You can see about half of them are below age 45. And the other two areas tended to be a little older. The gender distribution is very similar. There were somewhat more people who self-identified as non-white in the comparison areas, and and the liquid treated sewage sludge compared to the cake sludge area. On other characteristics, the liquid treated sewage sludge area, people had reported having fewer years of schooling. And this is kind of interesting because they're younger, and generally younger people or younger birth cohorts have more schooling. So this is an indication of, I think, some socioeconomic differences between the areas. And then there's more smoking, more cigarette smoking in the liquid treated sewage sludge area, and more people who live with smokers. So this is also just an indication. Remember, we're going to adjust for these factors, but the communities are not really completely similar in other respects. What about the reporting of odor from treated sewage sludge? You can see there were actually more reports of strong odor or any odor in the areas where cake sludge was applied compared to the liquid sludge. But odor reporting was quite common in both areas. People noticed the application of this material. And here are the other odors we asked about. Agricultural chemicals were not reported that frequently, but they were reported most in the cake sludge application area. Livestock manure was reported. Odor from livestock was reported fairly commonly, most commonly in the areas where liquid sludge was applied. And then we also asked about odors from smoke from fires, which sometimes we get forest fires and so on that affect people's symptoms. That was important, or local burning and so on. And they were quite commonly reported in all three areas. Now, results of our factor analysis, we chose a four-factor solution, and this was an exploratory factor analysis, but the symptoms came out in very logical groupings. So the first factor that explained most of the variants, what we labeled the upper respiratory factor. It included these symptoms you see here: sneeze, runny nose, nasal congestion, eye irritation, nasal irritation, sore throat, and headache. The lower respiratory factor loaded most strongly on difficulty breathing, cough, and wheeze. The GI factor on abdominal pain and nausea, and the dermatologic factor on skin rash and skin ulcer. Those were the 14 symptoms that we asked about. Our results. The adjusted factor scores here are shown for the cake treated sewage sludge areas, cake TSS areas, compared to the neighborhoods where there was no sludge application permitted within 5 kilometers. And you can, I don't think there's much of anything going on here. The difference between the mean factor score in the cake sludge area and the comparison areas are small for the most part. They're more positive coefficients than negative, which would suggest a little bit more symptom reporting, but it's not by much. And the highest value, the 0.21 difference, is in the none or fake category rather than the moderate, strong, or very category. Moderate, strong, very strong, which is where we would expect there to be the highest value if there was a dose response. So we don't see a dose response there. In the liquid treated sewage sludge area, we see, I think, a little bit more going on. There's not much difference. The different scores are very small, all less 0.05 or less in the none or faint category. But in the moderate, strong, and very strong odor category, we have higher different scores, and in particular for lower respiratory symptoms and dermatologic symptoms, both elevated about the same amount, 0.27 or 0.28. Now let's look at livestock. Livestock odor, and this now combines all three study areas. The elevation, the different score for lower respiratory symptoms here, is the same as for the treated sewage sludge. So here's where we have a much stronger literature showing these types of symptoms among people exposed to livestock. And we're seeing a similar elevation here for livestock odor, as we saw with the liquid treated sewage sludge odors. So I'm going to present to you now results, very selected results from the specific symptom analyses. This is just for the liquid treated sewage sludge odor and the livestock odor, because we didn't see much going on with the cake sewage sludge. And I'm just focusing here on lower respiratory symptoms, which was the factor that was elevated in both liquid treated sewage sludge and livestock, and dermatologic symptoms. And what we found is that there is what looks like a dose response, in particular for wheeze, among the lower respiratory symptoms for liquid treated sewage sludge, and a similar elevation for moderate, very strong livestock odor. But that was associated with all three of these specific symptoms, whereas the sludge odor was really mainly associated with the wheeze symptom. And skin rash was the most elevated. And PR, by the way, stands for the prevalence ratio. So this means that the, for example, in dermatologic symptoms here, among people reporting none or faint odor, there's a 66% higher prevalence of reports of skin rash, and in the thigh odor area, more than double the prevalence of skin rash. This was not a common symptom, but it shows the most evidence of a dose response, and we did not see such a response for the livestock odor. So I'd like to share with you briefly the results of the flame retardant analyses. We had 211 pine and cedar needle samples collected from near people's homes as well as from nearby roads in 172 locations. These concentrations were determined by gas chromatography mass spectrometry. In the cake treated sewage sludge area, there was no association of the flame retardant levels with the application sites. However, it was associated. There was an association in the liquid treated sewage sludge area. And among buffers that we chose from 100 to 2,000 meters, the best fitting model was for 1,000 meters, so suggesting that there was an elevation of flame retardants associated with these land application sites within about a kilometer. The R-square for that model, which included the amount of sludge that was applied, reported to the state agency that regulates this practice, along with wind speed and direction and precipitation, the R-square was 0.13 approximately. So this, we believe, is evidence of off-site migration of particles from the land application of this material. And let me make it clear that although there are certainly concerns about these brominated flame retardants as potential health hazards, these are low levels. We were not looking at this as an agent that was responsible for symptoms, but as a marker of the presence of a complex mixture that could be producing these symptoms. Now, let me just summarize what I think is going on here. This material is applied very frequently in our state and in many states around the country, and it's not very well tracked, and this is where this environmental public health tracking issue, I think, comes in and will be important for the future. Many of these events are occurring all the time. They're occurring very frequently, but whether a human health effect will occur, I would propose, depends on five factors. First, on the concentrations of hazardous pollutants in the source material. So these could be biological pollutants, they could be pathogens or endotoxins, or they could be industrial chemicals that could be irritants or affect people in some other way. Secondly, it depends on the quantity applied. If you don't apply very much, it's going to be very hard to produce any effect on neighbors. But if you apply a whole lot, then you could produce an effect. So if you have hazardous pollutants and you apply enough, but then other factors need to be present. There's the distance to the neighbors. If you're applying this far enough away, it can't reach the neighbors. But if you're close enough, it could. The fourth factor are the weather conditions. If the wind is blowing away from the neighbors, it's not going to affect them. If it's blowing towards the neighbors, it could. And then you'd also need to take account any kind of barriers that might affect the transport. And finally, the sensitivity of the exposed people. There's a lot of variability in human response to allergens and to pathogens and to toxins. So the sensitivity of the exposed population is also a very important factor. So in conclusion, the odors from treated sewage sludge were commonly reported in the study areas. We also, I didn't give any details, but we asked a number of open-ended responses. We had a number of open-ended questions, and the responses of the residents indicated their concerns about nuisance from this practice, as well as their concerns about water pollution and chronic disease, which has not been studied, and we did not study here. The liquid treated sewage sludge application was associated with wheeze and skin rash, and that was after adjustment for livestock odors and the other covariates in the model. The association we saw between brominated diphenyl ether 209 congener and treated sewage sludge application is evidence of off-site particle transport from this practice into the neighborhoods that we studied. And with increased production and recycling of treated sewage sludge in general, surveillance of this practice, of the land application practice, and of symptoms that people periodically report to local health departments and clinicians and environment departments, this type of surveillance should be increased. So thank you. I'll take any questions or comments, please. So you're right, some people do call the sewage treatment plants. The sewage treatment plants, for the most part, however, don't control the timing of the application because they contract with a corporation that is set up to do this kind of thing. So they're involved in planning the locations and to some degree the timing, but a lot of the details are out of their control. So they're mainly left with their own engineering practices to try and treat this material so that it's as it's less noxious, but that's affected by their funding, and so they have limited options for addressing the citizens' reports.